KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, we have cloudy skies, 42 degrees here in Atlantic. We've already had a trace of precipitation since 7 a.m. Radar shows most of the showers have moved past Atlantic now and stretching a line that extends from the northwest corner of the state on down through Carroll and off to our east and down through around the just between Red Oak and Creston and just north of Clarinda. They're moving off to the southeast this morning. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. In Southwest Iowa news, the post office in the Fremont County town of Randolph may be headed for closure after the Postal Regulatory Commission voted 2-2 on an appeal by the city's mayor to keep it open. A tie vote means the appeal loses and the closing moves forward. The Postal Service, is on track to lose $14 billion by year's end and wants to close thousands of post offices. Many are small rural operations like Randolph, a town of 170 people. Closures are likely to begin in late May or early June unless Congress passes a bill to shore up postal finances. The Senate begins debate on the bill on Tuesday. Despite Mayor Vance Trivoli's appeal, a commission order posted Thursday affirmed the closing. The estimated annual savings by closing Randolph's post office is about $45,000. A state panel has approved more than $22 million in tax credits to help businesses expand in Iowa, including more than $9 million for internet giant Google. The Iowa Economic Development Authority Board approved the credits Friday in hopes of creating 403 new jobs, retaining another 44 positions, and attracting $389 million in business investment. The financial aid went to 11 companies, with the most prominent being Google. The company is considering making a $300 million investment in Council Bluffs, where it already operates a data center. If Google expands there, it would mean at least an additional 35 new jobs initially, and later, at least 50 jobs. Other companies receiving state aid include the John Deere Dubuque Works, Pioneer Hybrid International, and Whirlpool Corporation's Amana Division. Former Iowa Governor Chet Culver says his program to support renewable energy research and development has been wildly successful, even if only a fraction of the money has been spent. Culver pointed to a plant in Shenandoah that's growing algae as an example of a success story from the Iowa Power Fund. He says construction on a cellulosic ethanol plant is underway in Emmitsburg, and a second plant is moving forward. Culver said those three projects alone, if they come to fruition, would justify the state's $71 million investment in the fund. Culver reacted Friday to an investigation by the Associated Press that found a third of the fund's money has been spent 5 years after its creation. He said the fund has been careful with tax dollars. On the eve of this Earth Day, this Sunday, a handful of state senators got into a partisan squabble over climate change. It was Senator Rob Hoeg, a Democrat from Cedar Rapids, who got things started by reading a statement from a group of Iowa religious leaders, including his own Catholic bishop.
This was the statement, climate change is one of the most pressing challenges facing our world today. And as religious leaders representing diverse faith traditions, we are called to reaffirm our commitment to be responsible stewards of Earth's resources and to act in love toward our neighbors both locally and globally. Scientists, including those representing 28 Iowa colleges and universities who recently released a statement, have warned us that changes in global climate patterns are bringing more extreme weather events to Iowa, the United States, and our world.
And that prompted Republican Senator David Johnson of Ocheyedan to ridicule the idea that humans are the main cause of climate change.
With all due respect to our religious leaders, how much are you willing to spend to reverse what you call global warming? The country of Spain made a huge transition to their economy for green energy. What was the result of that? Bankruptcy?
Hoeg suggested ignoring climate change would wreck the U.S. economy.
How much better off would this country be if there hadn't been a $6 billion drought last year in Texas? How much better off would our state be if we hadn't suffered $20 billion in flood damage over the last 20 years? You want to ruin our economy, Senator Johnson? You stick your head in the sand and ignore this issue.
And Johnson responded with a little yelling of his own.
I did it just because I'm fiscally conservative and driving a...
He said that he's on the side of scientists that served... He served within that article in Greenland and the only member of the body that has done that. And he says there's no agreement in the scientific community, no consensus that things have really changed because change happens. Senator Joni Ernst of Red Oak openly admitted to being a Republican who drives a fuel-efficient Prius.
I did it just because I'm fiscally conservative, and driving a Buick Enclave all over my quite large district was just not affordable.
That prompted Senator Tom Courtney, a Democrat from Burlington, to admit that he drives a gas-guzzling Corvette convertible.
That's my choice, and I think it makes a 64-year-old man look pretty good. So that's why I drive that.
Key leaders expect the 2012 legislative session to wrap up sometime next week, but big decisions remain on budget issues and an agreement on property tax reform. U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is suggesting the Army Corps of Engineers should be more nimble in responding to weather events that impact the agency's management of the Missouri River.
It would be well for the Army Corps to be more attentive to the needs and to listen more closely to the concerns along the river systems. I think there's a tendency for the Army Corps to say, hey, we've got the answer. You know, you really have to have better dialogue and better communication with folks.
Farmers and others along the Missouri River have complained about the way the Corps managed the release of water from upstream dams last year, leading to massive long-term flooding along the river corridor. Vilsack says the Corps needs to build more flexibility into its management plan for the Missouri.
When they saw record snowfalls and snowpack, there should have been, hey, how does this fit into our overall strategy, and does it still fit, and does it still work? We're seeing more extreme weather conditions, and I think that puts the emphasis and a requirement on all of us to constantly rethink whether or not our assumptions were correct in whatever plan we've developed.
Vilsack says the Corps should be more engaged in an ongoing review of its management plan for the Missouri or any other river.
Not just, well, we've done this plan and we put a lot of effort into it and we could park that plan and we could just work that plan because it's the right plan. Well, maybe it was the right plan at the time, who knows, but you now have changing weather conditions and you should be saying, does this plan still fit?
Vilsack, a former Iowa governor, made his comments Friday morning during a taping of an appearance on Iowa Public Television's Iowa Press program, which airs this weekend. Congressman Steve King released a statement Friday after visiting the areas affected by the tornadoes in Thurman and Creston last weekend. He says he's reminded of how adversity calls upon the resiliency of Iowans. King went on to say that volunteers from across the state rallied together to help those affected in southwest Iowa this past week. Several colleges sent volunteers to help clean up the damage, and many other Midwestern states pitched in as well. And he says he's thankful no lives were lost, and more than ever, he's aware of the extraordinary efforts that Iowans will offer when a neighbor is in need. King toured homes in Thurman that were damaged and also visited Creston's Hospital as well as Southwestern Community College, both of which sustained damage in the storm. When a string of tornadoes hit the central U.S. and Great Lakes region the weekend of April 14th, communications in some of those areas was knocked out, leaving local officials with no way of calling for help or reporting damage for that matter. And that's where ham radio operators stepped in. Tom Rice, Skywarn coordinator for Des Moines National Weather Service Office, says just before an EF2 tornado hit Creston last Saturday evening, causing severe damage to the hospital and other structures, amateur radio or ham operators in Creston reported storm observations directly to the National Weather Service. Rice said they're a valuable asset to discerning information that could help save lives.
The National Weather Service recognizes the importance of ground truth information and a variety of methods to get that information to them at the Weather Service office. And one of those methods is via amateur radio. The Weather Service has a quite extensive amateur radio station that they then staff when the time arises, when the need arises.
Rice told KJAN News that when severe weather is imminent, the National Weather Service in Des Moines calls in one of four trained operators to come out and coordinate ham communications. When the storms hit April 14th, Rice, who lives nearby, was called into action.
I was in communications at 6:59 with an amateur radio operator 2 miles west of Creston, and at 7 o'clock with another operator in Creston, and they were reporting hail. And if the tornado had not been so rain-wrapped, I suspect they would have seen it.
Rice said the radar signature for that tornado was very brief and almost imperceptible. He said by the time they could pull the trigger on warning residents, the twister had already left the Creston area. And after the storm passed, ham operators began to provide communication support to local officials.
We started getting backfill of information that there had been damage in Creston, and we know that some of the conventional communications lines for the county and for the city were compromised, and so the amateur radio operators were able to give us some intel to help the Weather Service then know that, okay, we had this, and now we know we've got storms capable of producing this stuff, which helps further warning.
The Weather Service learned from the radio operators that the hospital had been hit in Creston and there were injuries. That information, Rice says, was very valuable and enabled officials to direct state resources to the area. He says the day following the storm, officials discovered that the local school district lost the 80-foot tower that's used for the school bus repeater. The Creston Amateur Radio Club offered their antenna, coax, and space on their 200-foot tower for the school.
It proves that these amateur radio operators are members of their community. And that's what community people do, is they take care of their community. And that amateur radio, that's exemplified through a lot of different areas with amateur radio operators. They're very much attuned to community service.
He says it doesn't take much to become an amateur radio operator, and people of all ages enjoy the hobby, which also provides a service. For more information, you can go to www.dmraa.com. Rice also recommends everyone attend a free spotter training course and purchase a NOAA weather radio. The six-digit codes for those radios can be programmed with assistance from your local emergency management office or by finding your county and surrounding county codes at the Weather Service's National Oceanic and Atmospheric website. There's a link to that under the same story on our website at kjan.com. Also in Western Iowa news, authorities say a Monona County woman held her infant son under a bathtub faucet to drown him. 24-year-old Ashley Cameron of Ottawa was charged with first-degree murder and the death of her 15-month-old son, Marquise Doms. Assistant Ottawa Police Chief Jim Fouts said Thursday that investigators believe Cameron acted alone. They say she was with Marquise during the time of his death and she was the sole caregiver for the child. Officers were sent to the Ottawa home on February 11th because of a report the toddler wasn't breathing. Fouts said that Cameron wasn't arrested until all the autopsy results had been obtained. She remains held in jail on $1 million bond. Her 2-year-old daughter is being cared for by relatives. Sheriff's officials in Page County say a Shenandoah man was arrested Wednesday night on a warrant out of California. 31-year-old John Joseph Bowen was taken into custody at around 10:30 p.m. at his residence in Shenandoah. Bowen was wanted for a parole violation. He was being held in the Page County jail without bond, awaiting extradition to California. An Atlantic Police Department reports 38-year-old Renee Fife of Atlantic was arrested Thursday on an OWI charge. Fife was brought to the Cass County jail and held pending a court appearance. Also, the Page County Sheriff's Office said yesterday no injuries were reported when a car struck and killed a deer on 140th Street Thursday morning. 68-year-old Judith Barker of Villisca was traveling west on 140th when a deer crossed the road. Barker was unable to avoid hitting the animal. Her 2007 Ford Fusion sustained $2,500 damage and was rendered inoperative. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, activists say the guns are quiet today in the central Syrian city of Homs. Syrian government troops hid their armored vehicles before the arrival of the United Nations observers who toured the area. Activists say Homs is peaceful for the first time in more than a week, and there are no reports of violence through most of Syria today. An Afghan official said the country's security forces have prevented a massive attack on the capital of Kabul with the arrest of five militants who had 11 tons of explosives. The official says that three Pakistanis and two Afghans are in custody. He says the explosives came in from Pakistan. Reports from the U.S. Defense Department and congressional investigators are casting doubt on a program that is at the core of American plans to defend Europe. The recent government reports warn that the Obama administration's missile defense shield in Europe faces major delays, cost overruns, and critical technology problems. And it's no bargain, but it's getting better. After a four-month surge pushed gasoline to nearly $4 per gallon in early April, it's dropped 6 cents over the last 2 weeks to a national average of $3.88 per gallon. Experts say gasoline could fall another nickel or more in the next week. And checking our funeral announcements this morning, Louis P. Lauritsen, age 88, of Farmington, New Mexico, and formerly of Audubon, died December 19th at his home in New Mexico. Celebration of Life memorial services for Louis Lauritsen will be today at 10 o'clock at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Audubon. Kessler Funeral Home in Audubon has arrangements. Doris Betty Elizabeth Brock, age 88, of Avoca, died Monday at Avoca Nursing and Rehab. Mass of Christian burial service for Betty Brock will be today at 10:30 at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Defiance. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Byron Dwight Jensen, age 78, of Harlan, died April 13th at Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. Funeral services for Byron Jensen will be today at 11 o'clock at the Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. Rolf Stearley, age 74, of Atlantic, died Tuesday at Atlantic Nursing and Rehab. Funeral services for Rolf Stearley will be on Monday at 10:30 at the Brayton Lutheran Church. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has arrangements. David L. Nelson, age 75, of Atlantic, died Thursday at his home. Funeral services for David Nelson will be on Monday at 11 o'clock at the First United Methodist Church in Atlantic. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home of Atlantic has arrangements. Dennis Reha, age 70, of Adair, died Thursday at Mercy Hospital in Des Moines. Funeral services for Dennis Reha will be Monday at 2 o'clock at St. John's Catholic Church in Adair. Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home of Adair has arrangements. Pamela Lynn Jensen, age 48, of Menlo, died Friday at Mercy Medical Center in Des Moines. A funeral mass for Pamela Jensen will be on Tuesday at 10 a.m. at the All Saints Catholic Church in Stuart. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stuart has arrangements. Lois Gross, age 82, of Fontenelle, died Thursday in Edina, Minnesota. Funeral services for Lois Gross are pending at the Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle. And Dean Cooper, age 82, of Greenfield, died Friday at the Good Samaritan Society in Fontenelle. Funeral services for Dean Cooper are pending at the Steen Funeral Home in Greenfield. That's a check of the news here on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.